What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome back to episode 132 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again by the man, the myth, the legend himself, the king of the court, the king of the court side. It stumbled over that. It's been a while, it feels like. Joey, what's up, buddy?
Speaking of legends, dude, I don't know how I managed to do this, but it feels like every other episode I forget to mute Twitch, and there's that one point where it comes online and the music is still going on our end with that slight delay, and I get like this double music thing going at different volume levels. One day I'll learn. It's only episode 132, right?
132, and we still don't know how to mute our own Twitch. Well, speaking of our own Twitch, Joey, great news. I finally got back into my own Twitch channel today, right before the show.
Congratulations, sir. It was about what? About a month?
It was about 2 months.
Oh.
It was a wee long. But no, I'm excited. Now I have all the subs again. I have access to my Overwatch League pass. After this podcast, I will be purchasing the Pro Pass for the LCS Pro scene there. And I'm looking forward to actually using it this weekend. Really, really freaking excited about it.
So I'll tell you what, I actually do not think I'm going to purchase the Pro Pass. I don't think I'm going to do it. I've watched so many people using it, and I've heard so many mixed reviews on it. Like, I like the idea, but with a game like League of Legends, I don't know if it's necessary. We can probably dive into this more later on. I think if you're really trying to learn a role and focus on that lane in particular, or like a really hot matchup, maybe it's the way to go. But at the same point, I feel like something like Overwatch that's a lot more chaotic makes a lot more sense for the purchase. So I think I'm going to wait it out a few weeks and see what happens.
The drama at the top of the show? What in the world is this, Joey? Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at the Level Up Podcast. That is at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, go ahead and give Joey and myself a follow as well. You can find Joey at Courtside King and myself at Fiasco. I almost said Fiasco at Fiasco. That doesn't make any sense. So if you're watching live on Twitch, welcome. We love to see everyone in the chat room, as always. And those handles are below those beautiful, beautiful, beautiful mugshots that you are currently watching out on Twitch. And if you're listening on the podcast later on down the road, we will have those on the show notes for you below. Nation, esports never stops. This week is no different. Pro League of Legends is back with the summer split. Overwatch League Stage 3 returns. And Joey and I are going to be shoutcasting a FIFA event at Celebrate Fairfax this weekend in Northern Virginia. Now, I think we should stop the show there because that's a pretty high, high note right there. But Joey, we have more topics. What else are we squeezing into this episode? Episode 132.
John, as usual, we are going to hit on a few roster changes. League of Legends, for the most part, has calmed down because we are now entering into the summer split. So just a couple of those. Other than that, a ton of partnerships all around either esports events or apparel more than anything. So we'll dive into some of those. Some really exciting ones, John. Some people that upped it again and some other ones that are a bit more newer to the space. In addition to that, Call of Duty League spots are selling. So we'll break that down as well as a lot of other things in the world of esports.
Joey, I just got back from vacation. I may have been slacking a little bit, so I apologize if I'm not pulling my weight this show, but I am ready to try my best for you and our listeners / viewers on Twitch. So, Joey, that's a lot of stuff we have to talk about. I'm going to need some assistance, and I feel like you're going to need some assistance too. So, Joey, for the 132nd time, we are not alcoholics, but it is time for the drink of choice. Joey, your beverage, please.
John, I'm back to the wine, going Montepulciano again over here from Italy.
Look, last week, I couldn't handle that name. This week, no different. Kudos to you. I actually went to a winery a couple weeks ago. I don't know if I talked about it on last week's show or not, but I picked up some bottles of wine myself. So who knows? Joey, I actually went to Giant for lunch today because I wanted to pick up some salads and whatnot. And they had those, it's all the rage for us millennials. It's the soda and vodka in a can kind of thing that they're selling right now. So it was on sale for $10. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to use it for the show tonight. Guess where I left the alcohol, Joey?
In your car or in the office?
In the office. So it's currently sitting in the refrigerator of my office where alcohol is not permitted. so instead, I'm going back to the good old stuff, the Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey. So I am going to be swigging some of that sweet, sweet goodness tonight. So yeah, Joey has his wine. I have my hard liquor. We'll get there quicker. Joey, let's waste no more time. Let's get right into it with gaming and esports news. Let's go.
Kicking things off, guys, Rainbow Six Siege. We have G2 Esports adding Uno to their Rainbow Six Siege roster. A good addition here, John. This is a scene we continue to see growing week after week, it feels like. Rainbow Six has already jumped in to all different aspects of revenue sharing, viewership growth. They've really shown how esports can grow at a younger level. Rainbow Six is not an old franchise. They've been around time and time again, but Siege in particular has really made that extra jump into esports that other Rainbow Six titles have not seen success in yet. So the fact that Siege already has that revenue sharing, we already see tons of roster acquisitions and these big name organizations buying in with rosters, whether it be player by player or buying teams out completely. G2 being no different here, adding Uno, a very talented player, to the roster. 100 Thieves making some noise as well, this time with a streamer. They have added Courage as their third content creator for the content house. This is something we're seeing more and more as well, John. Content creation houses for organizations. Not just a Fnatic or Cloud9 buying up a streamer this popular in a game, but going out, combining streamers into a house so that you're not only getting that stream content, that video content on YouTube, but you're getting interactions and more play between streamers as well. It's shown a lot of success in many organizations. 100 Thieves here obviously adding a very popular one in Courage. He used to be a shoutcaster for the Call of Duty pro scene. On top of that, very popular Fortnite player as well. I think we're going to see more and more of these houses pop up. How about you?
Yeah, I completely agree. And really, this is, it's a terrible example to use right now because of all the drama surrounding this organization, but it's FaZe Clan to a T. FaZe Clan has perfected the idea of like a stream house or a social media house that does content creation. And they do an incredible job at it. Not all of them are pro players, if you will, that constantly compete in tournaments or leagues here and there, but they are well known for content creation, for streaming. That's something that FaZe Clan has done incredibly well. Their contracts may be a little shady here and there, but again, that's not uncommon in esports. But just from that aspect, FaZe Clan is almost like the golden standard when it comes to having a house for content creation and streamers. And Joe, you hit the nail on the head. Other organizations are starting to realize, hey, you can make a ton of money doing it this way. 100 Thieves, no different. They're looking for content creators. They're looking for streamers. They're looking for other ways to get fans exposed to the 100 Thieves name and bring them into their organization on the content creation side and the streamer side, and maybe hopefully cross over into the esports side as well. It's almost crazy not to. It's marketing. It's esports marketing at its finest. I love it. I think you're right. More organizations are going to be doing this in the future. I mean, I'm kind of surprised not a lot of organizations are doing it right now, having these streaming houses.
Right, and we've already seen the popularity that streamers and organizations can bring one another. Obviously, terrible case to bring up right now, but Tfue, his numbers grow exponentially after joining FaZe Clan. Yes, you can argue all the different stuff going around, but if you look at the raw numbers, how much they grew, just as one example, that's the case with many, many streamers out there. Once they join organizations that have an established fan base, whether it be an esports, whether it be a gaming community with a lot of popular gaming roots and gaming upbringing, there's just tons of potential there as you branch out into the fans already established with that organization or that streamer. So really, both parties win in this sense, as long as your contract isn't crazy and you read over it and get a lawyer. So a lot of exciting stuff going on here. Nick Merckx in particular is also joining into FaZe Clan on the opposite side here. So we have 100 Thieves and we have FaZe Clan buying in more. Nick is coming in as a competitive Fortnite player, but like we've seen with a lot of these competitive Fortnite players, John, you're not only getting the player, but you're getting a streamer as well. A lot of these players are streamers, especially in the Battle Royale genre. They like to play on both sides. They like to do a lot of streaming, build up their community, get revenue that way, as well as play in these one-off Fortnite tournaments that happen here and there. So I expect a lot from this. I think we're going to see this more and more from organizations, from streamers looking to partner up with organizations as well. They've seen how successful other streamers can be, and I think we're just at the beginning. A lot of them starting to buy in, but I think it's just going to get more and more as we go and as more titles are released, particularly in that Battle Royale space. Moving on to our last League of Legends move that I know of. There might be one or two out there we missed throughout the last couple weeks, but Fnatic has promoted Academy jungler Dan to their main roster. Dan will act as the team's sixth man. So this has been a very big, interesting, almost like a controversial point that has come out recently. Broxah will be remaining the starting jungler, but the fact that we do see an organization like Fnatic bringing up an Academy jungler up against a jungler who went to the World Finals last year in Broxah just because of a rough spring split potentially, Fnatic is saying Dan did really well in really the whole Academy League in the UK as well as in EU Masters. I understand it from that perspective. I think it's a good move showing, hey, if you do well at Academy, we'll move you on up. At the same point, Broxah being in the World Championship last year is feeling a bit defensive, I guess you could say, in a sense. He's coming out and saying he believes he deserves his spot, and he's going to show more and more why he deserves his spot. So to me, this is more Fnatic saying, let's give back to our Academy players if they're performing well, but at the same point, continuing to encourage our pro players to continue to get better. A lot of people argue it should have been a sub for Bwipo instead up in top lane, as he was much more inconsistent than Broxah. At the same point, John, looking at this from an outside perspective, what are your thoughts on bringing up someone? So you have one player who's been very successful in his career, and then at the other point, you're bringing up someone new who's shown some promise over the last 6 months.
So kind of like, so first off, I like this tactic. And the reason why I like this is Fnatic is not saying, hey, Broxah, look, you had a bad split. You struggled. It's not what we're looking for, so we're just going to outright replace you. They straight up said, hey, look, you're still our jungler, but we know you struggled. We want to see you do better. We want to see you perform the best that you can for this team like we know you can. But if you don't, this guy has been playing incredibly well down in the Academy scene, and we're going to let you know he has a legitimate shot. He's going to be your backup now. And if you keep struggling, we may have to try something out. That's what happens in traditional sports. Take football, for example. When a quarterback really starts struggling, the backup comes in. The backup comes in and outperforms like crazy, and eventually the organization says, hey, look, we're going to go this direction, and we're going to leave the veteran behind. It's a maneuver to kind of light that fire under the starter's butt, if you will, to get them to play better, to get them out of their comfort zone and try to excel, to find that competitive energy again. And if they don't, they're replaceable, sort of, in a way. Everyone is replaceable, even in esports. If you're not going to play at the highest level, if you're mechanically digressing, if you're just not that player anymore, somebody else is going to step up. That's just how esports and the world works. It's that cycle of rotation. If Broxah falls down that path, then Dan is going to probably be their jungler. I think this is a move to light a fire under Brox's behind to really get him to say, hey, look, Fnatic's not joking here. You may be a big name. You may have gone to the World's Finals. You may be the second best team according to the World's outcome. But at the same time, we want to achieve that again, if not take that next step to be the world champion. And if you're going to be a part of it, you need to do your part and play your role. That's what I personally think this is more of a motivation thing. But on the other hand, like you said, Joey, it's a compliment to Dan for playing incredibly well that now he's on the main roster. He now gets access to everything that the main roster gets. The practice, the intel, the notes, the study sessions, everything that they do, he's now going to be privy to that. You may not get that same level of focus or study or concentration in the Academy because you're maybe working on refining your skills only, not necessarily team mechanics, team plays, synergy like that. But on the upper echelon, when you're on the pro scene, there's so much to work on as a team. You're expected to have your mechanics down pack, maybe tweak it a little here and there, but mainly it's focusing on team play, individual play for the laning phase, team play for the long run, objective control, all the other fun stuff with League of Legends. It's a huge compliment for Dan to be brought up. So it's twofold. It compliments because it shows a path from the Academy, but it's also lighting a fire under Brox's butt.
And I think there's so much more to this move, to be honest, Sean. I agree. You have the whole part lighting up Brox a bit, like making him continue to improve or giving that extra motivation to improve. But he was far from the worst player in the spring. To me, this is a way to reward Dan, put a little bit of pressure on Broxah. But Dan is also known as a shot caller in that team. It was between him and Prosfair at the Academy level. He knows the game very well at an in-depth level. And this current Fnatic squad really doesn't have a true shot caller. they really work by a, it's something like shot calling by the team perspective where everyone kind of is calling shots. And it works to a degree. We've seen Fnatic work really, really cleanly, but at the same point, we've seen them make dumb mistakes because of the system as well. To me, this is also a way for Dan to come in almost as a third or fourth analyst, in a sense, to say, hey, guys, why don't you look at this perspective? Or to bring that extra leadership to the board and try to train them up to shot call a little bit more efficiently, or to bring other perspectives that they might not be thinking about as well. Because even if you look at these academy players, John, they're all very high tier level. They're usually high diamond or above, a lot of them really falling in that master challenger range. So the fact that there are so many talented players in this pool at the academy system, bringing Dan up, who's really proven himself, I think is going to be an extra voice for this team, an extra analyst. And in my opinion, the biggest issue with spring was honestly the draft phase. So I think having more opinions on what comps could potentially work in the current meta is going to be another big thing. And that's something the academy team did very well this past season. In addition to that, we have a couple more moves coming on the backside here. FNC has also added a new team manager to the squad, Melon. And they also brought on a new head analyst in Empache. I believe he previously worked with G2 Esports before working with Excel this past split. So exciting stuff there. I think always bringing in new analysts can never really hurt, especially if the team showed vulnerabilities at some point. Fnatic, obviously, in the first seven games of the split, as well as in playoffs, they showed a bit of shaky form. So I think bringing in a new analyst should bring some fresh air over there as well. So I'm excited to see how it all pans out. Last but not least, we have Niji taking on Dan's spot. A really talented French player coming in as the new Academy jungler. So enough of that. That's pretty much our League of Legends moves as we head into the summer split. LCS kicked off this past week. We have LEC and LCS action both coming up this weekend. So really exciting stuff ahead. Into the business realm, we have Evil Geniuses hiring Nicole LaPointe Jameson as their CEO, making her the first African-American female esports CEO. John, this is a huge move for so many degrees. We already have so many actions out there as far as females trying to get higher level CEO positions. There's a lot out there, but there are definitely more to be desired when you look at the percentage of male versus female. A lot of stuff comes in about gender equality in that sense. Now we're moving into esports, and esports not really leading the margin because there are so few female gamers out there. But on the business side, this is a very, very big move, moving someone. And again, it's not just because she's African-American and female, but the fact that she has shown, she's proven herself, and now she's in this position making waves for not only African-Americans, but females as well.
Yeah, it's huge for diversity. If there's one thing esports that can really, esports can really pride themselves on, it's the fact that it is probably one of the most diverse and open-minded communities out there. There's, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, your socioeconomical level, what you believe, who you love. It doesn't matter any of that. None of that matters in esports. And that's one of the beautiful thing about esports is that because they're so open, they try to get rid of those social boundaries that have kind of been there in society for hundreds and hundreds of years that are wrong. You know, it's absolutely fantastic that, you know, Nicole is the first African-American female CEO in esports. It's absolutely fantastic. But let's not stop there. Let's find people that are just as qualified as she is to bring in more African-Americans into the business side of things, to bring more females into the business side of things for esports. Diversity is a beautiful thing. If, you know, talents, skill, they can do the job. Everyone can do the job. It's perfect. I love it. And I will love the day where this isn't breaking news, because the whole thing is finally when we get to that true equality point, it's just going to be, oh, the headline will read Evil Geniuses hires Nicole LaPointe Jameson as their CEO, because it's accepted. It's not rare anymore. It's common practice. That's what we need to get to. But until then, diversity wins. This is absolutely fantastic. Congratulations, Nicole. This is fantastic. I look forward to see what she's going to do with Evil Geniuses.
Yeah, very exciting stuff on the horizon, so we'll be sure to follow that. But for now, let's shift over to partnerships. International retail group Ernomics has moved as a ESL sponsor for ESL One Hamburg and several national leagues. John, we don't have to touch on this too much, but I think it's the fact that once again, we see a major esports tournament and esports tournament organizer locking down a huge group here. Ernomics, known very popularly throughout EU, working with ESL, which is one of the biggest esports organization tournament organizers out there.
Yeah, is this like the European version of Walmart?
So I want to say yes from the little research I've done, but yeah, I believe it's around that way.
Okay, because I just pulled up their website, and the first thing I saw was the Dyson cord-free vacuum. And I'm like, wow, this is great for esports. But yeah, it does kind of look like
Hey, everyone's Walmart. Got a vacuum.
Hey, look, you got to keep your gaming house clean. Come on, clean your gaming house. Simple as that.
It's going to be the new hashtag this week. Moving on, we have Samsung signing on as a main partner for DreamHack. If you're looking at ESL, you're definitely looking at DreamHack as well. DreamHack coming out with their mobile series this year. They'll be featuring Clash Royale and Brawl Stars, so working with a lot of Supercell games here, in particular two very popular competitive ones. Samsung is a huge sponsor. Samsung's been around esports for so long. They sponsor tournaments. They've sponsored teams, they've sponsored players, they've sponsored events. Now jumping into DreamHack, but it's not only DreamHack, John, it's the fact it's the mobile series. We've been back and forth, does mobile have potential in this space? They've shown that leagues are a little rough with the Clash Royale League. It didn't quite take off the way a lot of people thought. Vainglory was successful for a bit. It's kind of fallen off as well. Now we have a mobile tournament coming on. So I don't want to be the one to say this isn't going to work. I actually think there's potential here, and I want to say there's a lot more potential going with a tournament route than there is going with a seasonal format, in my opinion. Having orgs buy into a seasonal format for something like Clash Royale, where you and I can watch two people stand up at a podium for a few minutes playing a game, it doesn't quite intrigue me. But if it's a tournament that's going to happen at, say, like an E3 or a Gamescom or something like that, where we see people participating in an event off to the side, or maybe it's a... Even if it's a major event that's streamed for a weekend, I think there's a lot more appeal to it as opposed to a season-long thing where I have to tune in and watch these people up at a podium week after week after week.
Yeah, and I agree. And, you know, I think that's one of the biggest hurdles for mobile gaming is the presentation of it. Because like you said, Joey, it is just... Look, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to use my words. I'm going to be blunt. It is awful. Downright horrible to watch. The Clash Royale League, you know, bless their hearts. It just awful. It was terrible. And, you know, that is the biggest issue with mobile gaming. It's not as sexy, if you will, as having, you know, a 5v5 MOBA on stage with a gigantic audience. You can literally play a mobile game on a pro scene in a you know, inside of a broom closet. You don't have to have space. It's just... It struggles, and I'm really kind of curious because, like, you know, when you talk mobile gaming, it is massive in Asia. It's massive in a lot of other regions around the world, but for some reason it struggles here. It's nothing more than a game you play on the bus while you're commuting to work or to school or to whatever you do where you have, you know, a large amount of time that you can play. Or if you're a diehard mobile gamer, you know, a couple hours a day you log on. You know, that's pretty much all it is. I'm kind of curious to see as to why mobile gaming can't get to that point where it's a successful esport league. Now, I agree with you, Joey. I do think the tournament route is the way to go with mobile esports. It's just still, it comes down to presentation. You don't want to watch something that looks awful, that looks generic. You know, standing up at a podium with an iPad or a phone plugged in, it doesn't look very good. Now, you turn that podium into a spaceship, you know, sign me up. But I'm curious to see what DreamHack's going to do. And I think with Samsung powering them a little bit more here, I think that's going to help out quite a bit. I love this partnership because of that reason.
Right. And DreamHack's been around. They know how to run tournaments. They know how to pull in the viewership numbers. And I think that's really going to help here as well, as opposed to a developer like Supercell just running it themselves. So now you have the buy-in from Supercell, which is a mega giant in mobile gaming, as well as someone like a DreamHack who brings so much esports experience to the table and production really experience as well to the table. So I'm excited to see how this partnership works out. I think it will be successful. The main reason being what you said, the fact that it is so popular in Asia. When you look at China, it feels like Tencent wants to put out a mobile version of every single game. They push mobile PUBG type of stuff. They've pushed Battle Royales in general over there. They've pushed League of Legends. We have Arena of Valor. I believe it's called Glory of Kings or something like that over there. Something along those lines, but it's like League of Legends mobile practically. And they own League of Legends, so they can use the same character models and everything and not sue each other practically. So it's interesting to see how this all plays out, especially with it being so popular in Asia versus NA and EU. I feel like we're probably going to get there at some point, But at this point, I don't know if it's, I don't want to say the richness of the culture, but maybe on an average household level, we are a bit more wealthy in that sense, and we can afford more consoles, more PCs as a unit, as a metric of a company or a country. So I don't really know how that breaks down household per household, but I have a feeling maybe mobile is a little bit more accessible in something like China or Korea. So I'd be curious to see South Korea's numbers versus China's numbers versus EU versus NA when it comes to that console versus PC versus mobile market. At the same point, like I said, DreamHack, you're talking Supercell, you're talking some of the biggest companies in the world. They're going to make something happen here. And I think you and I would tune in for something like this. I don't know if we'd ever tune into Clash Royale League again unless we're paid to do it or unless they do something significant to improve it. But something like a tournament like this, I could see some potential, especially if they learn from the issues they had with Clash Royale League, the presentation, the freaking vertical screen. That's got to go. I think a horizontal display would be much cleaner as well if they could at least put something to make it horizontal on the edge. Maybe the person's most used units or his win rate currently in the season, or you could fill it with whatever, but at least make it look a little bit cleaner because it is just not fun to watch on a vertical. So I'm excited to see how it all works. Brawl Stars and Clash Royale are fun games to play. They haven't really captivated me for a long time. At the same point, I do understand the competitive edge of them, and I like to see them continue to grow. Dignitas has signed a multi-year deal with streaming platform Caffeine. John, Caffeine just keeps bubbling up into the news here. They continue to sign big organizations. Team Dignitas being the newest one of them, I believe Misfits is probably the biggest one they've signed so far. I still don't see them really competing, in my humble opinion. I mean, the platform looks all right. It's developed by, I want to say we said Apple developers for the most part, if I remember correctly. So it's got that clean Apple look to it, very nice user interface. But you're already competing with someone like Twitch, who is huge with the backing of Amazon, and YouTube with the backing of Google. It's just going to be very hard to work your way in there. And then on top of that, you have Mixer with the backing of Microsoft right there in that second or third spot with YouTube. So it's just, it's a steep, steep hill to climb. And I think signing these organizations is great for these organizations because they're getting money out of it. But is signing a Misfits and a Dignitas really enough to take us over to Caffeine? For me personally, I don't know if I'm that invested. Maybe if I was a huge Misfits fan or Dignitas fan, I would work my way over there to at least watch the player streams, but I don't know if it's enough to make me stay over there.
Yeah, and you know, it's great for Caffeine. It's another major organization that's coming over to use their platform. You know, I want to see more from Caffeine. It is very clean looking, like you would expect anything developed by former Apple developers. It's like you said, Joe, it's just going to be hard to compete with the already established Twitch, YouTube. I mean, you could even make a really good argument for Mixer and a lot of moves they have been doing. You know, I like the deal for Caffeine. Dignitas, you're really not going to be exposing yourself to that many new people with this deal. You're essentially counting on your diehard fans to come over and watch your player stream or whatever content you decide to put on. If they are diehard Dignitas fans, they're going to watch. They're going to make that move. Are you going to get the same kind of results? Are you going to get the same kind of visibility as you would on a Twitch or YouTube? Probably not. Until Caffeine really starts making some kind of push to separate themselves from every other version or knockoff version or whatever you want to call it of Twitch and YouTube, to challenge them, they need to make something stand out to make people want to go to Caffeine, to watch content creators on Caffeine or gamers stream on Caffeine. Now, with that being said, Joey, I'm going to throw a little curveball in here, and I just pulled a pun before I even said it. My favorite player, Trey Turner, streams Fortnite on Caffeine. So as far as I'm concerned, when I found that out, I only learned because he tweeted it out. That was the only reason I knew. So shout out to him and his four viewers that he had on Caffeine. He'd probably have a lot more if he was on Twitch, but for some reason he's on Caffeine. But I tuned in, I saw the interface really for my first time, and it's clean. I like it, but it's not Twitch. It's not YouTube. So kudos for Trey for streaming Fortnite, but Caffeine's still got a long way to go, but signing Dignitas is a really, really good second step.
And I really don't want to spend a ton more time on this, but even if we look at features, Mixer beat Twitch and YouTube to so many huge features, from co-streaming to zero latency to having users be able to interact with streamers. Like, they beat them to like 5 or 6 major features. But since then, we've seen Twitch integrate almost all of those within a couple months. And the fact that Twitch barely lost anyone. They lost a few people, and they mainly lose few people when Microsoft does like big giveaways. So like Microsoft E3, you'll probably get a watch bag if you watch it on Mixer over Twitch. Okay, they get a ton of viewers for that particular day or that week, but then overall, they're really not competing with Twitch on a major basis, at least to me. I don't know the back-end numbers, but at least from what I'm seeing, Twitch is still the huge competitor. And when you look at Twitch's numbers overall, YouTube lags behind it slightly, and Mixer lags behind it. But you still look at these companies, and I have to go back to it. You have Amazon, you have Google, and you have Microsoft here. Now you're looking at Caffeine. Yes, they have Apple backing in a sense because they have employees that were formerly of Apple. That's bringing experience. That's not bringing the monetary value. And when you have all these other huge companies backing you, can you keep up? And I think that's really where Caffeine's going to struggle. They're coming to a saturated space, but on top of that, they're going to have a very hard time locking down the funding unless they get someone like an Apple or a Tencent or something like that to buy in and continue to fund them as well. Speaking of funding, Puma wants to fund Cloud9 a bit. They've signed a multi-year sponsorship extension with Cloud9 to develop a full apparel collection. John, the former deal only covered the League of Legends team. This new deal is going to include every single C9 team with the exception of the London Spitfire. This is a huge deal, and it comes down to huge money too. We're talking 8 figures for this deal overall. Puma really buying into esports, a very popular brand, especially when it comes to soccer. I would say that's the sport they're probably most well known for. Now buying into esports and continuing to invest in esports, expanding by quite a bit here.
All right. I'm going to tell you why I don't like this deal. And it's going to be easy. It's all personal preference. I just don't like Puma, is when it comes down to it. I'm not a fan of their style. I'm not a fan of what they've put out there. Their shoes to me are very boring and basic. I think Adidas has a ton of levels above them, if you will. I think Puma is trying to find a way into the next generation. And this is a great deal in that sense. But, you know, me sitting here, you know, I am an Adidas fan. I do like Vans. I'm okay with Nike. But it's just Puma's not one of those names that's going to get people excited. It's good for Puma. Again, it's that exposure with a major, major esport organization. And now it's going to cover everything but the London Spitfire. That's huge. Absolutely huge. But at the same time, it's like Puma doesn't get me excited. Nike, Adidas, Vans would be like, I'll put Vans in the same spot as Puma here, but Vans for me would be absolutely fantastic. Nike, Adidas, that would be huge. But Puma is just, it doesn't excite me. It's great for the organizations, but it's just, they haven't done anything to really make me excited for this move. So I'll sit back a little bit and find out what they're going to come up with. But with the going prices of hoodies right now, like what Joey, like you can walk into the mall into like a give me a store in the mall you shop at, Joey. Besides Victoria's Secret.
You know the last time I've been to the mall?
What? Fine.
I mean, it's probably the time we went to get me jeans. why would I go to the mall if everything can be ordered online nowadays?
Okay, fine. Fair enough. But like if you go out to like Under Armour and you want to buy a hoodie, you're dropping almost $80 for a freaking hoodie. You go to the Nike outlet, you're dropping like $60 for a hoodie, if not more. If you go to like even at Vans, when I go to Vans, a hoodie at Vans is still $65 or $70. Cloud9 game like jersey hoodies that they have started at $60. I don't know how much a Puma hoodie runs for because, you know, I see the line on it and I usually run away, or the Puma, if you will, whatever it is. And I run away because it's not interested. But, I mean, there's going to be a significant upcharge here because of the brand name Puma. So I just hope it doesn't go too crazy, and I really hope the apparel just doesn't suck.
Hey, it could be Champion.
You know... Side note real quick, all these rappers that are like on tour are rocking Champion. Like 5 years ago, Champion was literally the, you know, the upgraded Walmart version of athletic gear at Target. You know, yeah, Target's losing them in a year or two. But still, Champion, when I can't remember the last time Champion was sexy. And now all of a sudden Champion's popping up all over the place. Everyone's like, hey, yo, I got my Champion jacket on, my Champion pants on, my Champion socks, my Champion t-shirt. And I'm sitting just going like, you look ridiculous. You look like you're stuck back in like the early 90s or the late 80s. Like, go on YouTube, Google late 80s and early 90s music videos. That's what they look like. There is no difference. It looks ridiculous. I'm not a Champion fan when it comes to that. Sorry. Sorry, guys.
I'm not a huge Champion fan either. I think Puma's a good deal, though, to be honest.
Yeah.
I agree. I'm more of an Adidas person than a Puma person personally. At the same point, I feel like Cloud9's one of those organizations that's not going to just sign off on anything. They're going to want to see models of the shoes, of the hoodies, of the hats. They're going to want to approve all the designs. So knowing that, knowing how thorough really Jack works his enterprise over there at Cloud9, I really expect good products to come out. It's not like Puma doesn't have the quality. They just haven't quite been there in the style, in a sense, I think we can both say, with certain degrees of their shoes or their outer athletic wear. So I think when you have Cloud9's backing and approval on top of Puma's quality, I think we could see good products come out of this deal. And Cloud9 is very, very happy with an 8-figure deal as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd be happy with an 8-figure deal from Puma. I wouldn't be complaining at all.
Speaking of Target, which you mentioned, one of their competitors is actually jumping into the market as well with Walmart. They've already been selling some League of Legends and esport organization jerseys here and there. They have now locked up a deal to sell all the LCS team jerseys as well. This will be all 10 teams in the LCS. In addition to those jerseys, they'll also be selling t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and other merchandise through Walmart's online LCS fan shop. I think this is a big move, but also not a huge move. So when I look at Walmart, I'm thinking, okay, I like this move if the jerseys are sold in store. The fact that they're online, why am I going to go to a Walmart over the actual pro team store? That to me is the big question mark, unless there's a huge price cut. At the same point, then is it still a price quality a jersey quality cut as well? Like, if I'm buying a discounted jersey from Walmart, am I also getting a lower quality jersey? Because if I'm already searching online, why am I not going to go through a Cloud9 shop as opposed to a Walmart shop?
Let me tell you about my biggest fear with this deal. And you already mentioned it. It's the quality.
Right.
When you take a look at the licensed merchandise that Walmart is allowed to sell for the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, hockey, all the major traditional sport leagues out there, when you go to Walmart and you get that awesome $9.99 t-shirt of your favorite sports team, it lasts you, what, 3 wash cycles? And it's gone. The color fades. The logos fall off. And the material is just cheap. And it looks cheap. And it looks like a knockoff. And it is. That's my biggest fear, is if Walmart is now having a hand in this, are they just using it as a marketplace? You know, Walmart.com is trying to go the way of Amazon.com. They're trying to use it as a marketplace. If it is solely a marketplace, okay, fine, that's great. But then you hit the nail on the head here, Joey. It's online only. And if you're going to buy a jersey online, why are you going to go to Walmart.com to do it versus, like you said, Cloud9.gg? Or TSM.gg, or TeamLiquid.gg, or whatever Team Liquid's. Well, it's not TeamLiquid.gg, but you know, why would you not go to that team's website and buy it directly from them? There's no discounts, but the big question is quality, because Walmart has that track record of you can get the names on cheaper clothing that's not going to cost you $35 for a t-shirt. You can get it for $10, but the quality is going to be absolute garbage. That's Walmart in a nutshell. That's what I'm terrified of with this deal.
And honestly, I'm totally okay with crappy quality if it's in store. The fact that it's online and I have the choice between the Walmart quality stuff or I have the choice between the actual pro shop style of stuff, you 100% go for the pro style no matter what extra you pay. But if I'm already going in store and I'm shopping for shorts or whatever I'm shopping for at this Walmart, and I look around and I see an LCS shirt, maybe I'm more inclined to make that purchase. On top of that, if I'm the LCS, I get so much more marketing from them having it in store as well. If this random person walks by and sees Fortnite apparel and their son wants to walk over there, oh, hey, it's Fortnite. And then over on the shelf to the right, they see an Echo Fox logo. Now you're so much more intrigued. You're getting more marketing. If you're the LCS or the teams involved, you're so much happier with an in-store purchase. Online, I almost feel like maybe you make a bit more revenue from people who stumble upon it on Walmart.com, if that even is their address. At the same point, like, I would hope people go directly to the teams. The teams get a bigger cut from that overall. They're going to get better quality jerseys as well. So the only win here is if you somehow drag people over from Walmart.com that are already shopping on there and they decide to buy through Walmart.com. Otherwise, I feel like you lose a lot, honestly, for both parties involved, not having merchandise sold in store.
Yeah. And you know, chat makes a great point here. Here on the Twitch chat for this topic is, you know, what if the person is looking for, you know, something that shows that they're supporting a team, or maybe they're just starting to explore their fandom with a team and they don't want to commit to a $35 t-shirt or a $60 esport jersey or an $80 esport hoodie. Then you're absolutely right. Like, in that essence, if Walmart does live up to its history here and that has like esport merch in store for a lower price, I guess that's fine. But at the same time, when we're in the era that we're seeing esport merchandise become more like streetwear and demanding higher price tags and those items selling out in the matter of minutes and hours, I don't know. Like, I guess there is some kind of want, some kind of market for the Walmart brand-esque esport memorabilia if it does end up going that direction. But I just don't see it from what I'm seeing from sales from these team websites. You know, take Team Liquid, for example. They have one of the best merchandise lines anywhere in esports. And every time they release a hoodie or a t-shirt or whatever, it's sold out within a day. And we're talking all sizes from extra small to 5X. I mean, it is gone. So it's like, is it because it's limited? People have that, you know, fear of missing out, or what? It's interesting. And I guess we'll see what happens with this deal with Walmart. But as of right now, it looks like it is only going to be online. But if it is in store, that's kind of cool, too. But I just don't I don't see the market there being big enough to justify that, like, Walmart knockoff kind of brand. And that is my own personal opinion. So if it's wrong, flame me, please. Absolutely.
So I'm not going to flame you, but at the same point, Team Liquid is a very obscure example in the sense that they're one of the most popular brands in the world. When you look at someone else, and I'll bring Echo Fox back up again, they're not the most popular team anywhere in the world. They're not even the most popular team in NA. Their stuff is not going to sell out even close to as quickly as a Team Liquid one is. So when it comes to those smaller teams, those smaller orgs in general, I think you can get a lot more potential here. Again, the deal is with the LCS, so you're only looking at the smaller end LCS teams as opposed to smaller orgs out there. But in particular, I think there is some sales opportunities. But again, I think you have a lot more opportunity if you put them in stores. I think a lot of the ways you sell this new up-and-coming merchandise or really introduce people to new things is them seeing it when they don't mean to see it. Walmart.com, maybe you have a banner or something that runs up there now carrying LCS merchandise, and maybe that pulls some people in for a couple weeks. But overall, seeing it in store, I feel like you get a lot more purchases, a lot more brand notability, and Walmart would more in turn make better sales. The LCS teams would make more money. And again, I think it is going to be discounted merchandise. I highly doubt it would be the same quality as what we have at the LCS. But at the same point, that's what some people want. Some people don't want to splurge for that jersey or splurge for multiple jerseys. They just want a t-shirt for an event, or they want a t-shirt to start representing a team and get into esports. At the same point, esports is more on the more affluent side, we can say. It's free to watch on stuff like Twitch, but at the same point, you have to own a computer, or you have to own a phone, or you have to have a data plan or Wi-Fi. Like, there are definitely things you need to get into esports that are a little less accessible than sports, because you can see sports in the newspaper. You can see sports anywhere, just about. It's marketed everywhere. So I think accessibility is another issue here, and bringing down a price point could open it up to a whole nother genre and get more people involved as well. Again, my biggest issue here, not necessarily the quality, but the fact it's only sold online. I'd really like to see it in stores, at least at select locations. Activision has sold its first 5 Call of Duty esports slots. John, these come from Overwatch League teams, as Blizzard said, or Activision Blizzard said. Everyone who bought into the Overwatch League gets first dibs as far as the Call of Duty slots up for grabs. Of all those teams in the Overwatch League, we only have 5 so far buying into the Call of Duty League. The biggest thing for me is because a lot of those teams are still waiting on the returns from the Overwatch League. They still want to see what the money's going to look like for a major esports league like this. But a few people are ready to move on, and that is Atlanta, Georgia's Atlanta Esports Ventures, Dallas, Texas with the Envy Gaming Incorporated, New York, New York with Sterling VC, Paris, France with Contact Gaming LLC, and last but not least, Toronto, Canada with Overactive Media. I think this is a win for Blizzard in a sense. Like, it's a little disappointing that they've only pulled in five for the first round. At the same point, it does show that these particular organizations and cities are ready to buy into the next league here with Call of Duty. And again, it might not be because they're questioning the Overwatch League in general. It could be them questioning the Call of Duty franchise. With Overwatch in general, it is one game that's going to continue on and on and on as long as the league lives. With Call of Duty, they switch over games practically every year. There's a lot of instability there, and there's going to be a lot of roster turnover. Some organizations might be looking at the game choice and wondering if they really want to commit to that.
Yeah, and I think the biggest issue here is that return on investment, like you said. They've already committed $20+ million for Overwatch League and their team, and we're in season two. You're not really going to see a return on investment with something that is so groundbreaking like a regional esport operation like Overwatch League when it's still being played in one city, and we haven't even gotten to the regional aspect of it yet. We're not playing in our own hometowns yet. We're not playing home and away games quite yet on a regular schedule like Overwatch League has been saying they're going to do in season three. That's where your potential is. That's where the return on investment is. So I don't blame Overwatch League teams and ownership for not wanting to buy into the Call of Duty esports scene at this moment. But with that being said, this is still great. We have a European team. We have a Canadian team. We have the other three teams currently located in North America. I think DC will probably have a team. LA is definitely going to have a team. But I think everyone is hesitant, like you said, Joey, to see what happens first with Overwatch League in Season 3, really before Call of Duty is going to take off.
Moving on, the Xbox Game Pass is coming to PC. So this is something we talked about a little while ago, John. It's been rumored for a while. Now we have confirmation it will be coming to PC. We don't know all of the details yet, but to break down a few that we know, Xbox has already signed on 75+ content partners for the PC version of the Game Pass. That is huge to have so much buy-in already. Of these 75, we really don't know who they are. They could be very small indie developers. They could be huge developers. So that we have to still wait for. I have a feeling a lot of that will be coming out at E3. Additionally, future Xbox Game Studio games will be coming to Steam as well. That is freaking ginormous. So this is saying, hey, Xbox is fully committing to PC and console. They're ready to come on board, and it's a huge win for Steam as well. It does not say anything about exclusive from what I've seen yet, but if it does become Steam exclusive, or at least Steam and Windows Store, Microsoft Store, whatever it's called exclusive, as opposed to Epic Games Store, this is a huge win for Steam. You're looking at monster titles like a Halo, like a Gears of War, like Ori. There's so many big Microsoft titles set to come out, and a lot in particular being announced this year at E3. When all of those games are going to come out, if they're going to be exclusive to the Steam Store on PC, that is going to be a giant win for them over Epic, and it's really going to increase the competitiveness between both stores, in my opinion. Again, still out there. They've just mentioned Steam. They haven't said anything about exclusivity yet, though. Last but not least, the Microsoft Store will also be supporting Win32 games now, which is another huge deal. This has been something that developers have been waiting for years now. They've always wanted Microsoft to support Win32 games. Now they're moving in that direction. This is the next step forward with Microsoft and their promise to redo the Microsoft Store to make it much more gamer-friendly and user-friendly in general. Download times on there take forever. It's so hard to move around on there. It's very clunky. That's all supposed to be redone. Now they're opening it up and making it more welcoming for the developers as well as those users. I think this is another huge win for Microsoft, another great move out there. More details to come on that at E3 as well. We're not really going to preview E3 because there's way too much happening this week, but E3 is next week, so we'll be talking a lot about that come next week. John, you watched the Apple announcement today, and there was a big thing in terms of gaming. Apple TV and iOS will support both Xbox and PlayStation controllers. This is giant for gamers, particularly in that mobile market, those that are looking and playing on Apple TV as well. But to me, John, the underlying thing here is Apple saying, hey, Google, screw you. If you're going to come out with Stadia, we're going to support the other giant people in the marketplace, the Microsofts, the Sonys, potentially the Nintendos down the line. This, to me, is Apple saying, hey, we love you gamers, but at the same point, we're also going to dagger Google a little bit with this move as well.
Yeah, I like it. It kind of defeats the purpose of mobile gaming when you're carrying around a PlayStation controller or an Xbox controller. But in all honesty, this might be what it takes to make mobile gaming make it as an esport, having that controller. So it doesn't look as wonky with someone standing up there playing on a phone. I like the idea of Apple working with Microsoft and Sony to bring their controllers to Apple TV and iOS. I think that's a smart move by Apple TV. You know, sometimes the most innovative things are the most simplistic things, like working with other companies that already have an amazing following, like Microsoft and Sony. You know, don't reinvent the wheel, make the wheel better. Don't reinvent mobile gaming, Apple, make it better. And that's what they're doing, working with Xbox and PlayStation. I love it. And that was a major announcement. I was not expecting that watching the WWDC 19 announcement today. So when that was announced, I did do a victory lap around my office. My coworkers think I'm crazy, but I was really excited for that announcement.
Took a bite out of the virtual apple there, John. At the same point, chat is thinking that Call of Duty spots might be going for $3 million. They're actually reportedly going for $25 million a franchise spot. To me personally, that is way overpriced. League of Legends went for $10 million. I think League of Legends is 10 times the value of a Call of Duty spot, in my opinion. So I think they're very overpriced, and I think that could be another reason we see such low buy-in, at least at the initial wave. Call of Duty is headed back to its success in the Modern Warfare era. John, they're announcing their next title, which is, to no surprise to anyone, Call of Duty Modern Warfare, yet another spin on that particular title. In particular, the big things here, there will be no season pass, and all post-launch maps will be free to play. On top of that, crossplay is confirmed as well, another huge win for gamers. The biggest issue yet, though, that's coming out is that it's going to be one of their darkest titles as well. You see a lot of stuff with the, I believe it was the No More Russian mission in Modern Warfare 2, where you disguise yourself as a terrorist. And that is supposedly going to be engulfed in this whole particular game. So it's really going to run that line of a good guy undercover as a terrorist or as someone working in a very negative way, in a sense, plot-wise. So a lot of people are coming out questioning this game. With already so many question marks about violence in esports and gaming coming out already, now they're really going to draw the line here. They're almost taking, I don't want to say a GTA style, but they're almost taking that GTA style in the fact that they're saying, hey, let's have more violence, let's have more questionable morals involved into this game, when that's already getting questioned so much right now by parents and by the government. So to me, it's a very interesting route that they're taking here. Me in particular, I don't know how I feel about it. I think I like the fact they're going back to the Modern Warfare time. I think those were some of the best games for Call of Duty. The guns were great. It wasn't super out there where you had this crazy futuristic stuff going on. This feels much more normal to me, and I believe it's going to make the competitive scene better as well. At the same point, the storyline, I think, is going to give them a lot of negative heat. They always say, though, good publicity, bad publicity, it's all great publicity overall. So maybe it's going to work out for them. At the same point, I think they're also going to get hit pretty hard for this one.
They will, and they got hit hard for that terrorist mission that you were talking about, where you go into an airport and just unleash on people. I think their safety net, if you will, is going to be the option to skip those missions. Now, I'm actually going to applaud them for going this route. It adds something different to a video game title that, in all honesty, you can only change so much before it feels stupid. You know, Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Okay, cool. Awesome. You know, your next one comes out in 2 years and it has modern day events, you know, themed in it. Okay, that's fine. That's great. There's no replay value. You can only mod the same machine gun to do the exact same thing but look different so many times before people are just like, okay, this is boring. You know, you have to do something for the story mode players, for the players that are looking for substance, looking for lore, looking for some kind of story they can play through to like help them connect to whatever message you're going for. And I think being able to play both good and bad side. Now, look, it's not groundbreaking. They weren't the first to do it. They may have been the first to really use it as a terroristic aspect when you, like, go shoot up an airport and everything. But they're not the first to have that good guy, bad guy, you know, aspect in a video game. Take Heavy Rain, for example. A story mode based game where you make decisions to play the game. Spoiler alert, I feel like I can do this because the game is like over 10 years old now. You play a detective who is actually the murderer. And while you play him, you are covering up your own crimes. Now, you learn it later on in the game, but still, you play the bad side. You play the role of a murderer. It's kind of the same thing. It adds a different element. It makes me excited that I can see both sides of the story now. I like that kind of content. I like the lore. I like being able to see the entire story rather than just being shown to me in a clip scene. I want to play it. I want to feel those emotions. I want to see how I react in those situations through video games. I think that's something that is unique, and I applaud them for doing that. Are they going to get heat for it? Absolutely. Should they get heat for it? Absolutely. But like you said, Joey, no publicity is bad publicity. It's always good, and it's going to create a conversation. And if it does incredibly well, I think we're going to see more of it happening in video games, in shooters like this, and in a lot of other story mode-based games where you can play both sides.
I don't think it's going to do well at all, to be completely honest. I think it's too heightened right now, and it's a really bad time to go this route. And even something like the Heavy Rain example you gave, it's different because of how well the narrative was done, the fact that you didn't know until the end what role you were playing. Something like this, you go in knowing what you're doing. What you're doing is wrong. You're making that choice actively, whether you have that choice or not. Your character has to make that choice to progress the storyline. And I like the idea of skipping it. I think that is a good option for younger players in particular out there. At the same point, the title is marked mature. Players coming in here, parents buying this game, should know to a degree what they're looking for. But if they're comparing it to other Call of Duty titles, like the 5 or 6 previous they bought, this one is very different and it could be very misleading in that sense. So they need to be sure to advertise it very well out there that this is something a bit darker, particularly for parents, because this could be a huge turnoff for them in gaming in general. So I'm a little worried about it. I'm excited for the game. I love Call of Duty's multiplayer. One thing with the Call of Duty franchise, I don't want to dive too much into this, but I wish they didn't have to make a new game every year, to be honest. I would love for them to drag a game out for 3 or 4 years. The competitive scene on a lot of their games, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare in general, was the most popular competitive scene, at least in my opinion, the most praise I've ever seen for a multiplayer game in that particular genre. They did so well, I would love to see that last longer than it did, but it seems like every year we have to go to a new realm, a new dimension, a new era, and really continue on and on and on. And then we get too futuristic and we have to come back to the modern. Are we eventually going to go back to World War II even? Who freaking knows? It feels like they push this too much, and they like the $60 sales they get every single time, even up to $120 for some of these box sets. At the same point, I really think they stutter their esports growth in particular, as well as the longevity of a game. I think they could add more in-game purchases. Do a model like League of Legends. Do a model like Overwatch. Obviously, it's a bit different because you're dealing with guns as opposed to characters. But at the same point, look at Fortnite. Fortnite has characters you can get here and there. At the same point, they have a lot of skins involved. Call of Duty could do something like that, and I think be just as successful, maybe even more successful, than jumping from publisher to publisher to publisher every year with different games in this 3 rotation. So for me, a lot of missed opportunity, but at the same point, they keep selling, and that's why they keep doing it.
Yeah, and just the last hit on this, you mentioned the mature rating. That's something that parents need to actually take a look at. If your 8-year-old kid is asking you to play Call of Duty Modern Warfare, do your research. You know your kid the best. If you think your kid is mature enough to handle that kind of graphic content, that's on you as a parent. Don't blame it on the kid. Don't blame it on the developer. The developer marked it for a mature audience. It went through that rating system. It is your job as a parent to regulate that. If you choose to buy the game for them, because I do not know a single retailer, even Walmart, GameStop, none of them, even online where it requires you to do a birth date certification to even see it, which is easy to cheat around. But to buy, I don't know an 8-year-old that has a credit card linked to Steam. And if you're a parent who does do that for your kid, then you're asking for this. But be a parent, research the game. If you feel like your kid is old enough to handle it, buy it. Watch your kid play the game. There's nothing wrong with that. And if you feel like it's a little too graphic, you can always take the game away. It's as simple as that. But you as the parent, you have to make the call here. It's not the kid's call. It's not the developer's call.
Sweet. We're going to speed it up a little bit so our editor doesn't kill us this week. May 28th, Pokemon press conference. Some big news came out of this, John. We can touch on it lightly here. Pokemon Home was the first major thing. It is a cloud service that will work with Nintendo Switch and iOS and Android devices, allowing you to bring over Pokemon that you've shared adventures with throughout your journey. Overall, I think this is a great idea. I think this is going to bring a lot of potential to the Pokemon theme, and it's really going to unite their ecosystem, not only in name, but now in the ability to transfer Pokemon. At the same point, those of us who dropped off Pokemon Go are well behind at this point, because those people who have leveled up on Pokemon Go here and there, they can now transfer their Pokemon to these new games that come out in Switch later this year, around December, I believe. So they're going to have a huge advantage up on a lot of different players, those people that have stuck with Pokemon Go. At the same point, this could also be the tool they're looking for to bring people back to games like Pokemon Go as well. I don't think it's going to work for me, but I could see it working for a lot of people out there. But this is a great way to unite the ecosystem, at least moving forward.
I caught my Scyther. I'm happy.
Pokemon Sleep. I don't know what to think about this one. It's a new app that tracks a user's time sleeping and bringing a gameplay experience unlike any other. Those are all the details we have at the moment, other than the fact it's going to come with a sleep tracking device. Get this, it's going to be called the Pokemon Go Plus Plus. Yes, that's two pluses. They learned how to name from Microsoft with the Xbox One X over there to go in line with the S as well. So we're having a little struggle with naming in gaming right now, but hopefully that'll come together as we move forward. John, I have no idea what to expect from this. I'm thinking it could be something like an AFK style game, where like if it can track your heart rate at a sleeping rate for a certain amount of hours, you get better rewards in game or something like that. That's the only real way I could see this working, other than like if they somehow change that metric to work similarly to the Pokemon pedometer they used to sell with the Pikachu. Instead of walking, it counts like, I don't know, good sleep hours or the least amount of time waking up throughout the night. I really have no idea how this is going to work, nor do I think it'll encourage me to sleep better at night.
No, so I think it's going to be able to link up with like your Fitbit or an Apple Watch or something that can track your sleep cycle. But now here's my issue. I can't sleep with my Apple Watch on. I can't even do this podcast with my Apple Watch on. It bothers me too much. I talk with my hands. I'm sorry. It happens. When I wear my watch, it feels like it's a restriction. I'm a side sleeper. I have a hand under my pillow. My watch is on my hand that goes under the pillow. That is the issue. To me, like, that's really the only way I see it. Otherwise, how are you going to know they're sleeping? Like, there's no cell phone out there that can track your sleep schedule by itself. It has to use the assistance of some kind of other device that is attached to your body. Whether
it's the Pokemon Go Plus Plus, John, that's going to sit near your pillow.
That is terrifying. Like, what if it's like a Mr. Mime that's sitting there, and it's like every time like you get into REM sleep, it's like, Mr. Mime. You know, it's creepy. I don't know. No, Go Plus Plus, Go Plus Plus away.
That will be coming in 2020 if you want Pikachu to watch you while you sleep. On top of that, we also have Pokemon Masters. It's going to be a new game that allows you to battle alongside your favorite Pokemon trainers from the main series RPGs. I want to say this is a mobile game. Not 100% sure. I didn't actually pull that. More details will be revealed on it in June. This to me is kind of exciting, John. At the same point, I'm curious to see how in depth they go. I like the idea of battling like old gym leaders, for example, like the Mistys and Brocks of Red and Blue. Some of these other gym leaders like Erica that have come along the way. I'm excited to see how all that develops, but I'm not really excited to fight Bug Trainer Ballsy over here on Street Vermilion. Like, you know what I mean? Like, come on. Like, they have so many wacky people in there, and I'm just not super enthused to see this guy throw out his Venonat for a fourth time when I've seen him over and over in games. Like, I like the idea of it, but I want to see those monumental names, those gym leaders, those really popular people who just kept coming back throughout the franchise. That, I think, is the route I would rather see this go as opposed to this random bug trainer. Okay, anything else you want to say on Pokemon Masters?
No, I am so done with Pokemon. I'm kidding. No, I'm looking more forward to the new Pokemon games coming out on Switch more than anything. Not this.
Gotta catch them all, sir. Upcoming news, we have Pokemon Direct scheduled for June 5th at 6 a.m. Pacific Time. That is 9 a.m. Eastern Time for you East Coast folks like us. This is mainly going to focus on Sword and Shield, the next big Pokemon games coming to the Nintendo Switch. I wouldn't be surprised if we get more news about Pokemon Masters during this as well, but they could save that news for E3 too. The Avengers Project is another big game coming out. A lot of popularity here. People are wondering what route in particular it's going to take. Some people think it'll be like a, Marvel Strike Force, I believe, was one of the games that was really popular in that particular franchise. It could go that route. It could go a completely different route. The Avengers Project is going to be revealed worldwide on June 10th, so look forward to that as well. Into the realm of esports, before we wrap this up, we're going to talk about the recent league developments. Overwatch League Stage 3 begins this week. I believe it kicks off on Thursday. Exciting stuff to look forward to in that. Make sure to catch that Stage 3 action. But last but not least, we have League of Legends. The LEC kicks off this week. No games last week. The LCS gets the start for the summer split. They did have action last week. How did week one go?
Counter Logic Gaming, CLG, actually looks good right now. So those changes, granted, they did go up against 100 Thieves. 100 Thieves still struggling a little bit. CLG sitting at a 500 record after week one. So as of right now, I'm kind of impressed a little bit with how they played. But other than that, Golden Guardians 2-0 currently after week one. So some good matchups there. So let's take a look at the regular season standings after week one. First place, Cloud9, and only Cloud9. No other teams finished 2-0 other than Golden Guardians and Optic Gaming, all sitting at 2-0, all in first place. Drops us down to fourth place, TSM 1-1, CLG, Team Liquid, and Echo Fox all 1-1. Did I say Team Liquid is undefeated? I apologize. They went 1-1. In eighth place, FlyQuest doing their best anti-Cloud9 impersonation, 0-2, along with Clutch and 100 Thieves. So after week one, can't really tell much. Cloud9 did look pretty good. Myself as a Cloud9 fan, I'm excited. Yes, chat, thank you for reminding me Team Liquid is still 1-1. My apologies, I can't read apparently. But next week, Joey, let me take a look at the matchups here. Cloud9 Golden Guardians, I think, is going to be a very good match. That's going to be Sunday, June 9th. Both teams, again, sitting at 2-0. So that's going to be a battle of first place. Let's take a look here. I think Team Liquid Counter Logic Gaming, I do think Team Liquid will win. But I think CLG, that's really going to be the game that we see if these roster moves are for real. If the team has gelled together well and practiced enough to really go up against Team Liquid. I do think Team Liquid, again, will win, but I think CLG has an opportunity to really show what kind of team they are. Joey, is there any game you're looking forward to?
TL-CLG, the one you mentioned, I think is going to be a great game. TL actually going 1-1 last week is a huge surprise to so many people. I think the fact that their loss was to Echo Fox is like, was it a fluke, or is Team Liquid going to be this inconsistent as we've seen in the past? Now going up against a CLG team that looks pretty strong, I'm curious to see how that goes. I do think Liquid comes out on top, but it will be a good test for them. The other one, well, two others I'm looking at, 100 Thieves and Clutch Gaming. How bad does 100 Thieves suck is really my question here. They've made some changes. They've tried to improve. They have a really good roster overall stat-wise, but they just can't seem to perform very well in the LCS. How are they going to do up against Clutch Gaming that's also been struggling quite a bit as well? So that, to me, is a matchup of the struggling teams. Who's going to be the best of the strugglers? The other one to look out for me is Golden Guardians up against C9. Golden Guardians and C9 both with a very hot start so far. Golden Guardians showed a lot of promise toward the end of the spring split, as did C9. Golden Guardians now back, looking just as hot as ever, as well as C9. So both these teams really up and coming. They've really taken their momentum from spring and brought it to summer. I'm curious to see how that one plays out as well. And I think that'll do it for us this week, John. LCS again kicking off this week. Overwatch League joining back up with its action for Stage 3 as well. And of course, LCS continuing on into the summer split. A lot of great esports to watch. A lot more coming in these partnerships we discussed as well. But that'll probably do it for episode 132.
Well, Nation, that does it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. We love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to contact us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to reach out to us and this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram at the Level Up Podcast, Twitter and Facebook at that same hashtag, that is the LVLUP Podcast. You can also find us on Twitch, streaming regularly Mondays, Tuesdays, sometimes even Thursdays. Twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right. Make sure you tune in next week when Cloud9 defeats Golden Guardians. And we cover all the other happenings in the gaming and esports world. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up.